Hello and welcome to the Kim Iverson Show. We have a shocking show for you today. That's really the only way to describe it. Our first guest is a member of the African People's Socialist Party. He recently had his home violently raided by the FBI and is facing potential indictment. His crime? Well, the government is claiming he must be a Russian agent with ideas planted in him by Russia, even though he's in his 80s and he's been protesting the government for over 50 years. Now, whether you agree with his political ideology or not, his story of being targeted as a Russian agent simply for having wrong think is a warning to us all. Plus, new bombshell documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act show a massive COVID pandemic and vaccine cover-up that led to mandates and numerous injuries. You won't want to miss that. Now, if you are watching this someplace other than Rumble, you're going to want to hit the link and head over there because that is where both of those conversations are going to be happening. All right. The latest Twitter files were released yesterday by Matt Taibbi. This drop is number 14, if you've been counting, and they show Democrats holding on tightly to the narrative that anyone who spoke up against them was a Russian bot, even when there was zero evidence of it. The files show Democrats repeatedly requesting Twitter remove tweets or de-amplify hashtags they didn't like, showcasing an extreme abuse of power and a waste of taxpayer dollars. The release was done in two parts. The first part released yesterday completely undermines the false narrative that there was any Russian interference in the trending of the hashtag release the memo. Twitter officials found no evidence that these accounts were Russian and in fact found evidence that they weren't. Despite this, Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein and Democrat Congressman Adam Schiff published an open letter stating that the hashtag was linked to Russian influence, with Democrat Senator Blumenthal following suit. The second part of the files, a supplemental published today, show how Adam Schiff in particular abused his power by constantly asking Twitter to remove tweets he didn't like, including parody tweets about Joe Biden. So let's go through these threads. Let's start off with the thread that was dropped yesterday, Twitter Files 14, the Russiagate lies, on the fake tale of Russian bots and the release the memo hashtag. So Taibbi goes on to say, part two here, a critical, or tweet two, at a crucial moment in a years-long furor, Democrats denounced a report about flaws in the Trump-Russia investigation, saying it was boosted by Russian bots and trolls. Twitter officials were aghast, finding no evidence of Russian influence. Quote, we are feeding congressional trolls. That's what they call them. Congressional trolls. I definitely would call Adam Schiff a congressional troll. Says, quote, not any significant activity connected to Russia. Also, Twitter employees said, quote, putting the cart before the horse, assuming this is propaganda slash bots. So there you've got Twitter employees actually fighting back against these requests, saying, you know, we're not seeing that any of these are Russian bots. This is really putting the cart before the horse. You guys are just saying this because you don't like this trending hashtag of release the memo. And they're saying, you know, we're feeding these congressional trolls. So the files go on to say Twitter warned politicians and media that they not only lacked evidence, but had evidence the accounts weren't Russian and they were roundly ignored. So Twitter went back to these politicians and said, for one, there's no evidence that these people amplifying this hashtag, release the memo, are Russian bots. Secondly, we actually have evidence that they're not Russian bots at all. We have evidence that they're real people. But Democrats completely ignored them. Says on January 18th, Republican Devin Nunes, January 18th of 2018, Republican Devin Nunes submitted a classified memo to the House Intel Committee detailing abuses by the FBI in obtaining FISA surveillance authority against Trump-connected figures, including the crucial role played by the infamous Steele dossier. Then says the Nunes assertions would virtually all be verified in a report by Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz in December of 2019. So Devin Nunes is saying, you know, there is this abuse going on. The FBI is obtaining these FISA surveillance authority against Trumpian figures. And you know, they're just using this kind of Russian narrative in order to get these FISA warrants, and it's an abuse of power. So it goes on to find out that that's actually true. There was no evidence, and yet they were able to get these things. It says nonetheless, national media in January and early February of 2018 denounced the Nunez report in oddly identical language, calling it a joke. So you can see here, these are all the images. You got Joy Reid saying, you know, two ex-DOJ officials on Nunez memo, a bad joke. You've got The Hill saying Andrea Mitchell, or reporting that Andrea Mitchell says Nunez has turned House Intel Community Committee into a joke. You've got Washington Post, the Nunez memo is out, it's a joke. So they're all calling it a joke, like in unison. And we've seen this happen for the last few years. We've seen Democrats just really sound like robots. I mean, they just get out there and they all say the exact same thing, like they were handed down a request from the, or a directive from the top, whoever that is. And that person says, this is what we're all saying. We're going to be lockstep in unison, and we're going to call this Devin Nunez memo a joke. You know, he's going around saying, hey, there's a big abuse of power here. And they're like, that's, and there's no evidence of Russian influence in any of this. And they're saying, oh, you're a joke. On January 23rd of 2018, Senator Dianne Feinstein and Congressman Adam Schiff published an open letter saying the hashtag, quote, gained the immediate attention and assistance of social media accounts linked to Russian influence operations. So they released this press release letter, and they had no evidence of this. Twitter had told them over and over, there are no Russian bots behind this. We don't see any Russian bots. In fact, we're just seeing real people. It's real people who are actually amplifying this hashtag. And nonetheless, these two Democrats, a senator and a congressman, send out this letter saying, you know, this was a Russian operation. So anything they don't like, any narrative against them is Russian influence, is what they're claiming. It goes on, Senator is showing here on the 10th part of this thread, saying that Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal followed suit, publishing a letter saying, we find it reprehensible that Russian agents have so eagerly manipulated innocent Americans. No evidence at all. Twitter says this is not real. You guys are not here. There's no evidence of this. So stop it. You're going to look like they actually said you're going to look silly when this all comes out. Which they, of course, didn't think it would, or they didn't care. And now here they are looking really silly, that even though the company that itself says, we've been investigating this, we've been doing everything you've asked us to do, we looked at these accounts, they're not Russian bots, and these guys are still going for that. Oh, these are all Russian bots. The Twitter files continue and say that Feinstein, Schiff, Blumenthal, and media members all pointed to the same source, the Hamilton 68 dashboard created by former FBI counterintelligence official Clint Watts under the auspices of the Alliance for Securing Democracy. So this dashboard, Matt goes on to explain what this dashboard is. And this dashboard was created, it says that this dashboard was just kind of this, it's got this picture of Vladimir Putin blowing evil red Twitter birds into the atmosphere like he's, you know, controlling the narrative. And that this was a dashboard that was created by former FBI counterintelligence official Clint Watts. But nobody really knows where Hamilton 68 gets its information. And that is what the Twitter files show, is that there's this, that Twitter was saying to these Democrats, like, well, where's Hamilton 68 getting its information? Because no one's checking with us here at Twitter, asking us or showcasing or getting any information from us that these are Russian bots. So where's this dashboard coming from? Of course, the dashboard is the intelligence community, and they're not wanting to check because they're not wanting to check, right? They don't check because why would they check if it's not suiting their narrative? So Twitter kept saying, you know, be skeptical of this Hamilton 68. We don't know where they're getting their information, but it didn't matter. And really what this thread shows is that even with all of the evidence, even with Twitter trying to push back in this particular instance, Democrats didn't listen. They didn't care. And not only did they not listen and not only did they not care, but the media then amplified these false narratives, gaslighting the American people into believing that there was a greater threat of Russian misinformation than there actually was. And even if there was a bunch of Russian bots on Twitter, going around, would that influence your opinion? I mean, are you so malleable that a Russian bot could actually change your mind on something? You know, I mean, that's what they're asserting. They're asserting that the American people are stupid. And that, we are just so easily swayed by fake Russian bots that don't even exist. But if they did exist, that we are just a bunch of gullible people that would just gobble it all up and then spew a bunch of anti-Democratic Party talking points. I mean, that's what they're essentially claiming here. So the Twitter files go on to just basically showcase this continued attempt by Democrats, by staffers of Dianne Feinstein, staffers of Adam Schiff, the senators and the congresspeople themselves pushing at Twitter saying, remove this, do something, you know, these is bots, you need to de-amplify these threads. And ultimately, Twitter's continuing to go back and say, we don't have any evidence of this. And Democrats saying, we don't care. Do it anyway, essentially. So that is what the first round actually really kind of showcased. And Twitter starting to feel really starting to feel alarmed and even taking advantage of, and them sort of saying, you know, they're just going to keep taking. And really, Twitter executives started to become suspicious of Democrats, and they were starting to say in some of their internal messaging to one another that, you know, they're just doing this. They're just coming after the company in order to look like they're doing something, you know, in order to look like, oh, to show their constituents or to show the media, yeah, you know, we're pushing, we're on them. And really, there's nothing there. It was just absolutely nothing. And this is really, you know, Devin Nunes even says in here, and it showcases in the files, that Devin Nunes calls this, you know, the biggest scam on the American people. He was saying that this is, he says, quote, Schiff and the, this is number 37 here. So Devin Nunes says, Schiff and the Democrats falsely claimed Russians were behind the release the memo hashtag. All my investigative work by spreading the Russia collusion hoax, they instigated one of the greatest outbreaks of mass delusion in U.S. history. So that's really what this showcases, that Democrats, alongside the mainstream media, have instigated one of the greatest outbreaks of mass delusion in U.S. history, making us believe that Vladimir Putin is truly the one in charge, that Vladimir Putin is the one actually controlling the narratives here in the United States, that Vladimir Putin has his grip on the American mind. That is what the Democrats have tried to assert over the last, how many years has it been now, actually, right? When did this start? 2015, 2016? So certainly 2016 when Trump won that election. So, I mean, we're looking at 8, 9, I mean, how long is this going to last where they could continue to try to gaslight us? Apparently a lot longer, because they continue to do this over and over and over again, and they have not let up at all. And in fact, as we talk to our next guest, you will see exactly how far this has gone. They use this Russian collusion, Russian narrative, Russian infiltration on anyone who is against their agenda. Anybody who speaks out against the mainstream talking points, they're not even mainstream, right? They're just the talking point, the establishment talking points of the Democrats and the mainstream media. Anybody who talks out who's against any of that is a, you know, we've seen everybody labeled as right wing, white supremacist, racist, and Russian agent, Russian asset. And our next guest, it's an incredible story. You may not agree with him politically, you probably don't, but that's okay. Listen to how he's being treated, how they're trying to gaslight Americans into believing anybody and everybody, no matter their political ideology, if they're against the Democratic establishment, they must be only because Vladimir Putin has a grip on their brain. So we're gonna be talking to our next guest about that next. All right, I do want to give you a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I mean, imagine having a secret weapon that can help you achieve optimal health and weight management without the hassle of spending hours prepping and cooking produce. I know I don't have time for that. Field of Greens is that secret weapon. It's a scientifically formulated blend of specific fruits and vegetables that you're not going to find in any other product. Plus, it's made with whole fruits and vegetables, no extracts, zero extracts. So Field of Greens is not just a convenient way to ensure you're getting your daily dose of fruits and veggies, but it's also a long-term solution for better health. It's like having a personal nutritionist in a bottle. You can give your body the the nutrients it needs to run more efficiently and watch as you burn calories faster and reach your weight loss goals. I've personally been drinking the lemon lime flavor. I drink it all the time. I actually really like it. It tastes like iced green tea with lemon. So I've been drinking this a couple of times a day, getting all my greens in, getting all of my fruits and veggies in, which I don't eat enough of. So now with this Field of Greens product, I don't have to stress out about that as much about, oh, you're not being healthy enough, you're not taking care of yourself enough. I am now. So if you want to try it out for yourself, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code Kim. Get 15% off your first order. All right, we are now going live on Rumble exclusive. We're doing live only on Rumble from now on. So if you're not there, you're going to want to be there because you're not going to want to miss not only my next conversation that will absolutely just really alarm you, but also you don't want to miss the bombshell revelations that the COVID pandemic was a DOD cover-up. We're going to be Rumble exclusive only from here on out. So see you there. This week, journalist Matt Taibbi exposed in the latest Twitter files drop a shocking truth about the manipulation by Democrats to create a narrative of Russian interference, even when they're told over and over there was no evidence of their claims. Essentially, what we've learned is Democrats and the mainstream media have gaslit the American public into believing there's a greater threat of Russian misinformation than there actually is. This has led to grave consequences for many Americans. Many have been subjected to social media censorship and a violation of their First Amendment rights. Some are labeled as Russian assets and demonized. And worse, some face being investigated, raided by the FBI, and threatened with indictments by the Department of Justice. Many people believe this is only happening to right-wing Trump supporters, but in reality, it seems to be happening to anyone who's against Democrats' agenda. For Chairman Omali Eshitela, the members of the Uruhu Movement and the African People's Socialist Party, this is not just a theoretical threat. They say they were the targets of a terrifying early morning FBI raid in which their homes were stormed by flash grenades, drones, armored tanks, and armed FBI agents. Now they're facing the possibility of being indicted by the DOJ. For what? Well, apparently for being Russian agents. Just so you understand the absurdity of this claim, let me tell you a little bit about them. The Uruhu Movement, established in 1972, is led by the African People's Socialist Party. Their political theory, African internationalism, asserts that capitalism is a form of imperialism that exploits the African people. The movement advocates for the release of African prisoners in the U.S., which they refer to as concentration camps, and views U.S. police forces as an illegitimate standing army. In the 90s, the group frequently protested against police brutality towards African Americans. In 2008, they interrupted Barack Obama during a town hall meeting and questioned him on issues affecting the African community, such as police brutality, high unemployment, predatory lending, and Hurricane Katrina. The group has been criticized by the Anti-Defamation League for being anti-Israel and anti-Zionist. So you can see this group has a long history of protesting and speaking up against various U.S. policies. Their angst is nothing new, and it's not newly directed towards Democrats. And even though this group has been around protesting for over 50 years, they're now being accused of sowing division in American life and accused of being directed by Russia. Joining us now is chairman of the organization, Omali Eshitela. Chairman, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so very much for having us.
So I want to start with the raid that happened on your house back in July. Tell us what happened and what was the justification by the FBI to raid your home in this way?
Well, my wife and I were up in that at 5 o'clock in the morning, we have a program that we had initiated training African women to be doulas. St. Louis, you may know, is a city where enough African babies or black babies die in the first year of life to fill 14 kindergarten classrooms. So we initiated this, one of the programs that of the 50 or more programs we've initiated dealing with this question. And she was preparing because that morning the training was to begin for the doulas. And so we were sitting around talking, and out of the dark, this racket hit us. At first, it was someone on a loudspeaker commanding whomever was in this house to come out with your hands up and nothing in your hands. And then immediately these grenades, flashbang grenades, began to go off. Actually, one of them in the rear stairwell of our home. And they throughout the neighborhood, these bangings were happening. So I went downstairs and asked my wife to wait and call people and tell them we were being attacked. I get downstairs and I'm confronted with this array, I mean, a military of forces. These were military forces wearing flak jackets and carrying assault weapons, and the assault weapons were mounted with laser targeting beams that were bouncing off my chest when I came downstairs. My wife couldn't reach anybody because they had jammed our phones. So when she came downstairs following me, she was nearly hit in the face when she opened the door by a drone that they had sent up the stairwell going into our home. When we get outside, I'm questioning them, what is going on? Why are you doing this? They zip tie me behind my back. When my wife gets downstairs, they put handcuffs on her behind her back. And then they said that because of my persistent questioning, they said they were there because they were serving a search warrant because a Russian national was going to be indicted later that day in Tampa, Florida. And so I asked to see the search warrant. They said, well, we don't have it right now, but it's somewhere around. And then let me see the indictment. They said, well, they can't show you that because that's going to be later today when the indictment occurs. And so they took my cell phone, took my wife's cell phone. They went into our home. They knocked down doors. They stole computers and iPads and the like. At the same time, they were doing this in North St. Louis, which is the most impoverished sector of the city. And I live on one of the most impoverished streets in that city. The same time they were doing this, they went across town and then they attacked the center that we have there that's mostly in the white community, organized by white people, run by white people who work in the white community to win unity between the white community and the struggles that black people are involved in for reparations and et cetera. They used battering rams. They knocked down the doors there. They went to the apartment upstairs. They held a young couple at gunpoint, one of whom, Jesse Neville, is considered an unindicted co-conspirator, as I am. They went then to the home of Penny Hess, another so-called unindicted co-conspirator, and her roommate. They attacked the house. They knocked down doors, windows. They went to St. Petersburg, Florida, where there's an Uhura house there as well. They knocked the doors down. They took our radio station briefly off the air. And I mean, scores of FBI agents, armed FBI agents invaded. They raided the place. They stole all kinds of documents and electronic devices that they went into our archives with 40 or 50 years of archived materials of the struggle of black people. And we don't know how much they took there. And then they went to the home in St. Petersburg. They used the St. Petersburg, Florida Police Department to knock on the door of this young woman. Her name is Aretha Akile Kenyon. They went to her home, knocked on the door, and told her, the police, that someone is breaking into your car. You need to come out and investigate this. They got her outside. When they got her outside, then FBI agents come from everywhere. They surround her. They steal her cell phone. They attempted to interrogate her on the spot, and more or less that's what's happening. So what we learn later is that the FBI again has indicted this man in Russia, and they said that I was an agent of the Russians, that I went to Moscow, attended a conference in Moscow, invited there by a non-governmental organization to be on this conference for people from all around the world who were dealing with the question of self-determination. So they said, I did this and became, or either was when it happened, or became at that time, or later on, some some agent for Russia. They are convinced this is the case, they said, because we also ran elections, campaigned in St. Petersburg, Florida in 2017 and 2019. We were raising the question of reparations to black people. We were raising the question of black community control of the police that were killing us all around the country as they are today. And so they said that this was something that was paid for by the Russians. Then we were involved earlier on with a campaign to get people to sign a petition that we had initiated to take to the United Nations, charging the United States with violation of the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide as it relates to African people. They said the Russians are the ones who told us to do this, and they paid for us to do this, and also because we had a different position on Ukraine than what the United States has done. And we said that actually what we're looking at is a war that's been waged against Russia using Ukraine as a means to do this. And that this war has been going on for more than 100 years. 2018, the United States and various other colonial powers invaded Russia after the Russian Revolution, and they have never ceased in this project. So this is what they said means that we're working for the Russians.
Okay, so I want to read, I mean, this is just, first of all, I don't understand why they needed to violently raid your home in this way. It seems like they could have just knocked on the door and said, listen, we have this warrant now, we need to confiscate these things. I mean, it seems like they could have done this much more peacefully than the aggression that they used on you. I want to read the article from AP that came out from that day when you were raided. This is on the 29th of July, and this goes over the Russian that you were talking about that they indicted and what they're saying his crimes were. So it says here, a Russian operative under the supervision of one of the Kremlin's main intelligence services has been charged with recruiting political groups in the United States to advance pro-Russia propaganda, including during the invasion of Ukraine, the Justice Department said Friday. The indictment of Alexander Viktorovich Ionov reflects what U.S. officials say are ongoing Russian government efforts to meddle in the American political process, to shape public opinion, and to sow discord and dissent on hot-button social issues. In this case, the authorities say Ionov, for roughly the last decade, recruited political groups in Florida, Georgia, and California and directed them to spread pro-Russia talking points. He also paid for group members to attend government-funded conferences in Russia, as well as protest in the United States against social media efforts to suppress online support for Moscow's Ukraine invasion, the indictment says. Okay, so they're accusing you. So they raid your home. They use all of this aggression against you because they believe that this man from Russia was able to somehow program your brain. Right. He was able to essentially propagandize you to the point where your opinions are no longer your own. That's what they're basically asserting. Your opinions are not your own. Your opinions and all of this disruption that you're apparently sowing in the United States, all of these protests are actually a fabrication of Russian information that has been implanted in you by this guy. I mean, that's what they're trying to say. And they're trying to say that you or any of us that say we're against this constant funding of Ukraine, or that this was maybe even partially, you know, a NATO problem because NATO, you know, any sort of narrative opposite of the mainstream when it comes to the war in Ukraine, they're saying that is Russian disinformation. And they're actually saying that this guy is guilty because he helped fund protests in the United States that were against the social media companies and their censoring of anybody who supported Russia or had more of had a different narrative than the mainstream media. So that's even what, so there, it seems like the case against this guy, which from what I understand in more recent research, they haven't been able to do much against him. The case against him is, so he had opinions and maybe you guys agreed on some opinions, or he shared his opinions with you and maybe you then agreed on his opinion because you heard it. And then maybe he helped fund a trip or he helped fund a protest, and that's somehow illegal. How is that even illegal for anybody to do that? Share opinions, fund trips, say, hey, I've got this convention, you should go to it. I'll help you get there. Why not? Seems like in this, if this is what they're claiming is criminal now in the United States, it seems like any charitable organization that then funds any sort of conference, brings people to it, especially foreign nationals, seems like if you bring in people from Russia to the United States because you're a charitable organization, you want to talk about women's rights or something along those lines, right? That now you could be charged by Moscow as being a propagandizer, an American propagandizer, and therefore you should be raided, jailed, thrown in prison. I mean, this is the type of stuff that we accuse China of doing, right? We go and we say, oh, they think any protest is an American, you know, psyops, but rather than maybe the people actually having an angst against their own government. So this is what they're basically claiming of you. So have they gone, where have they gone with this now? I mean, that's outlandish. The evidence is next to nil on that. I mean, who cares? So what even if all of this was true? I mean, even if it's true, every last bit of it, that you made, maybe this guy's your best friend, and maybe this guy does pay for your trips and pays for some of your protests. Like, why would that even matter? So where are they at with this?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the entire story is a fabrication in terms of us taking money from the Russian government, and in terms of us being agents of Russia. I mean, I was doing what I do now for the last 60 years, and Ionov is not 60 years old. This was before he was born. I was involved in this struggle. And black people were being oppressed like hell in this country before Ionov was born, before Putin was elected or anything like that. And even during a time where Biden himself, that is to say U.S. President Joe Biden, was working in the Senate to limit integration and busing and things like that. So that's just an absolutely ridiculous story. But right now, we've been led to believe that indictments are imminent for at least four people. And it could be many, many more, because the suggestions are possible indictments that extend to everybody in our movement and our organization and things like that. And by the way, non-governmental organization in Spain brought me to Spain to speak. There were members who were in the Spanish government. There were former members of the United Nations who were there. I've spoken at Oxford University, debated there, I've been to Ireland at the time of the so-called Troubles, when the British were clearly dominating people in Northern Ireland and what have you. So, I mean, this is just crazy. This was stuff going on almost from the very beginning of my political life. So they are now holding us with the likelihood of indictment. In fact, we've been told that the indictments are clearly likely and very soon. In fact, they could happen any day now. And as I mentioned, there are at least four of us who have been identified as people who would be indicted. That includes me, Penny Hess, Jesse Neville, and Aretha Akile Kenyon, her legal name. And so for this, we're going to have to raise from $80,000 to $120,000 per person. They destroyed more than $40,000 worth of property when they attacked us in July 29th. We had to pay for that, and it's an attack on the various kinds of social programs that we've created, particularly in the St. Louis area, but they exist in St. Petersburg, Florida, and other places as well. And we think part of what they are doing is trying to destroy those programs, because the programs, their existence is a criticism in the United States. I talked to you about having to do doula programs because of the infant and maternal mortality rate of African people in this country. And that, by the way, meets most of the criterion of genocide, according to the United Nations Convention, that after it was passed, took the United States 40 years to ratify. So this is where we stand. We're looking at indictments right around the corner, very likely, unless people would take a stance here. And begin to expose the fact that they know what is happening and that this is a pure fabrication, it's a lie. We saw more demonstrations in May 26th, after the murder of the May 25th murder of George Floyd than's ever happened in this country. People who've never been involved in demonstrations in their lives. Police stations were attacked and on one occasion at least destroyed. And they're talking about the Russians are doing something to bring discredit to this country and discredit to the electoral process. I was one of those people who fought to register and educate African people in this country around the question of voters' rights and things like this. I faced mobs of white people in Madison, Florida, where they wanted to kill me, and also was almost arrested in Alachua County, Florida, just around the voting question. Nobody has paid a higher price for the right to vote in this country than black people. Churches bombed, children killed, leaders killed, and things like this. And somehow the Russians have to pay us to involve ourselves in the electoral process. This is just magnificently insane. And I'm just saying that I think that people have to take a stance here. And the question of whether this will go is going to be determined by people like your viewers and listeners taking a stance and stating opposition to this and helping the government to know that we recognize what they're doing. Let me just say this quickly. In terms of the Genocide Convention, which was passed in 1948 by the United Nations, by 1951, we had people like Paul Robeson, William Patterson, and a whole bunch of other African people actually went to the United Nations with a petition. We charged genocide, asking the United Nations to take a stance around this question as it regards to African people. They said that in genocide in 1981, we held in 82, we held the first United Nations, first international tribunal on reparations for black people in this country, charging the United States with genocide and using, in fact, the Genocide Convention as one of the laws that we were talking about. So, I mean, this notion that somehow we created this. I ran for office in 1972, and we've been engaged in political and in electoral politics and other things for the years and years and years. And for them to say that somehow the Russians intervened, but part of what this is about is to liquidate the question of what is happening to black people and say that if we say it, they don't have to answer it because the Russians told us to say it. They don't have to say whether that genocide is being committed or violating the convention because the Russians told us to say. They don't have to deal with that. And they just deal with the fact that somehow I'm an agent and that's the crime. And when the fact is that the crime should be directed at Zuckerberg, who's participating with them in terms of shutting down and keeping public opinion violent attack on the First Amendment, according to what you just read from that AP article. This is ridiculous. And so we call on people to go to Hands Off Uhuru, handsoffuhuru.org.
Yeah, you are being accused of wrongthink. That's really what it sounds like. That's really seems to be the only crime that they could come up with is, and your wrongthink must have been the Russians who instilled it in your brain, which it is. I mean, in this case, it is the most crazy, insane accusation to make. You've been doing this for a long time, and you just clearly laid out how long this movement's been going on and how long these sentiments have been felt by many black Americans in the United States for a long, 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 long time. And yet suddenly now it's not you, it's the Russians. You didn't really think of all this on your own. It was the Russians. So unbelievable that this is going on in this country. To anybody who challenges the power, anybody who challenges, and like you said, challenges to where they would have to answer, and they just don't want to have to answer it. They'd rather just say, no, that was Russian disinformation. Unbelievable. Well, thank you so much for being here. Best of luck to you. Hopefully we will talk to you again soon in circumstances that are better. Hopefully they end up dropping this nonsense, which it surely does sound like a lot of nonsense. So best of luck to you, Chairman. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Handsoffuhuru.org. Join us in this pushback.
Well, let me tell you about our sponsor. It's important now more than ever to diversify your portfolio. We don't know what's in store for the future with all of this inflation and geopolitical instability. I'm a big fan of investing in gold and have been my entire life. My family taught me always that gold was the way to go because it's so stable. Now, one popular way to invest in gold is through a precious metals IRA, which allows you to convert your current IRA or 401k into an account that holds physical gold and other precious metals. And Birch Gold makes it really easy to do that. You can get a free info kit by visiting birchgold.com/Kim. For thousands of years, gold has withstood economic and political turmoil. Having a precious metals IRA can provide that hedge against those market fluctuations and give you more confidence in your financial future. You can also buy gold through Birch Gold in the form of coins or bullion bars if that's what you prefer. So visit birchgold.com/Kim to get your free info kit. Well, our next guest is a former pharmaceutical executive of 25 years who's been investigating the role of the Department of Defense into the COVID-19 pandemic. In documents recently obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, she asserts that the DOD controlled the COVID-19 program from the start and that information provided to the public was a cover-up. Sasha Latipova, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so what we've all been told about the Department of Defense's role in the pandemic was that the department helped distribute supplies and equipment to frontline healthcare workers. We saw them deploy hospital ships to certain parts of the country. We also know that they helped fund the research and development of vaccines through Operation Warp Speed. But you say, through reading through all these hundreds of documents, combing through them and actually analyzing them, that there's way more to this story. You even say actually in your Substack piece that, quote, it wasn't just logistics or even just lots of funding, and certainly nobody was combating disease. So can you explain to us where did these documents come from? What did you, when you started combing through them as someone who's been in the industry for a really long time, understanding way more than most of us lay people about this, what did you discover from these documents?
Right. So the documents were obtained through FOIA by a nonprofit, and they're posted online. I've referred to the links in my Substack. Also, I obtained some additional documents through Securities and Exchange Commission shareholder disclosures for BioNTech and Pfizer and other companies. And so the review of all of that led me to, and I also had some disclosed PowerPoint presentations from Operation Warp Speed, BARDA, and they were available from public meetings, and so, and people just sent me the collections of their documents. So all of that together points to, first of all, our U.S. government, when they announced the global, when WHO announced the so-called global pandemic based on 40 cases worldwide out of 8 billion people, which is ridiculous. It's not any data. But they decided it's a global pandemic. Then our government treated it as if it was an act of war by their actions, not by their words. What they told to the public, they said it was a health event. What they indeed created, they put National Security Council in charge of COVID policy response, and National Security Council doesn't have any health representatives on it, only defense and intelligence. And then the acts that were invoked to fund what they call countermeasures. It's primarily Defense Production Act of 1950 and a variety of different appropriations, but they all went through billions and billions of dollars, went through the Department of Defense, BARDA, then to their manager, which is Advanced Technologies International. It's a manager for the DOD who specializes in contracts, which are other transaction authorities. So these contracts that we released, and there are about 400 of them, they're all OTA, other transaction authority. Yeah, exactly. So it even states it here. Other transaction authority, and the scope of work is typically described as, like here, I'm highlighting it, large-scale vaccine manufacturing demonstration, or they sometimes say prototype, but it's basically countermeasure, prototype, large-scale manufacturing demonstration. And that's how they contracted for these things, with billions and billions of dollars. So this is Pfizer, you're showing here, and their contract was initially 2 billion, it states here, but then it was actually in different options, 10 billion. So gigantic amounts of money is going to buy us a demonstration. And demonstration, by definition, is fake. Okay, so that's how they contracted.
Okay, so this brings, so that was a lot of information. So the first thing that I heard was that they treated this like warfare. So they were not treating this as, oh, this was just, you know, a health event that happens. Like we see other sorts of health events or, you know, maybe not pandemics, but other sort of, you know, epidemics like influenza disease that maybe is a little bit more virulent than normal. And they don't treat it like this, is what you're saying. This was treated differently than like bird flu.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it was the structure, the organizational structure of it made no sense if you think of it as a health event, but makes a lot of sense if you think of it as war. So National Security Council, which is advisory to the President of the United States on foreign policy, consists of primarily defense heads and intelligence heads, no health representatives. And then the Operation Warp Speed was headed by the Department of Defense. So also in the internal PowerPoints that were declassified and released, it's clearly stated the org chart is drawn. And at the top of the org chart, Chief Operating Officer is the Department of Defense. So it's not just they're distributing the vaccine. They actually in charge of all of it, design of the clinical trials, supplies, manufacturing, production. They have established manufacturing base that's manufacturing this. And it's not just Pfizer, it's hundreds of companies. And then they have, you know, the clinical trial design, the safety monitoring, the reporting, data security, legislative affairs, legal, the Office of General Counsel, which is Department of Justice. So this is basically, you know, people make a mistake thinking that this is Pfizer as a pharmaceutical corporation operating as a private commercial business. That's not true. What is happening here is the pharmaceutical corporations, plural, including Pfizer, have been folded into the government security complex through invoking of Defense Production Act. So the government fused with these companies, extended their liability coverage and sovereign immunity,
right,
and told them to follow the orders. You will get a ton of money. Don't ask any questions. Just do it.
Okay, so first of all, you know, so many of us were silenced and censored for even exploring the idea that this virus came from a lab, right? That was considered absolute conspiracy theory. But in reality, what you're saying is that when you comb through these documents, the government, our own government, was treating it that way. They were treating it like this came from a lab, this is an act of warfare, and now we have to hunker down and do countermeasures to this warfare that has been taken upon us. So right then and there, the idea that, you know, that the lab leak was a conspiracy theory just shows that the fact that they censored and silenced so many people who even explored that option, and yet behind the scenes they were doing this, I mean, that's really outrageous. Secondly, then the question is, well, then what did they know? What did they know that we didn't know? Because they did behave so oddly, and that is something that I think many of us that believed this looks like this came from a lab and they know something we don't, that this is not natural out in just kind of naturally occurred, because suddenly, you know, we watched country after country after country shut down. Like as if those leaders were told something, like you better lock everybody down because we don't know what this thing is and we don't know what this thing's going to do. So, you know, right there was just so much that was suspicious, so much that was just odd. And now we've got this evidence essentially from these documents that they also were operating in that same way. So that is, I think, big news. I mean, many of us really suspected this, but it's really pretty much laid out there now in these documents. The second thing is you're saying is that, so they brought in all these pharmaceutical companies and they said, listen, you're now working for us. We're now in charge as the Department of Defense. You're going to do what we ask you to do, but you're going to make a bunch of money from it. And you're going to get complete immunity. That is something many of us had a big problem with, right? They don't have any, there's no repercussions for people that had vaccine injuries or died from these vaccines. So you're saying that they did that. And they, because they knew, I mean, why would they have done that? Or because you make some claim that these were just fake, that this was a faked, all, the whole thing was faked. So what would be, what is that about? Explain that a little bit more.
Well, so what was faked, in my opinion, and actually, you know, based on these contracts and how they're written, is the representation to the public that, first of all, these are vaccines, and they're not vaccines, they're countermeasures. And you can see clearly in the contracts, it states that, that the FDA is regulating them. That's not true. That's the biggest lie. FDA has no regulatory authorities over countermeasures. And in fact, they all cited that piece of law, including the FDA, so they all knew what they were doing. The piece of law that says that use of emergency use authorized countermeasures under public health emergency does not constitute clinical investigation. And so the regulations need not apply. And so that's the piece that they all citing, including FDA, so they're in full knowledge what they're doing, and the FDA is impersonating regulators to the public,
right,
to convince everyone and fool everyone into believing that these are actually really pharmaceuticals, that they're really manufactured to good manufacturing practices, that really there were you know, rigorous clinical trials instead of the huge amount of fraud and manipulation of data that they did on behalf of these manufacturers. So that's the biggest lie.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, okay, so this all makes a lot more sense now that we see this, because the FDA, there was this, you know, why would they approve these medications or these whatever they are, right? You know, what you want to call them? I don't call them vaccines. I don't think they're really vaccines by the definition of what I always thought a vaccine was growing up. So these shots, I mean, it did feel like just kind of sham hearings. Like, it didn't matter what anybody said. I mean, we had two of the highest people of the FDA that were in the vaccine, that were vaccine regulators, resign because they were like, this is just foolery, essentially. And now we have this in these documents showing that it didn't matter if the FDA thought they were safe or not. They needed to just put up the charade, is what you're saying, to make, to bring that confidence to the American people. Because there was that, well, as soon as they're FDA approved, then they could be mandated. And as soon as they're FDA approved, then we're going to give these to our kids, right? I mean, that's what the whole narrative was. It was based on that FDA approval. And these documents are saying that that wasn't even necessary. You don't even, so it was all just... and it was very suspicious. It seemed like there was no pushback whatsoever from the FDA, even when we found all of these problems with the vaccine. It didn't seem to matter.
Exactly. That explains why for 2 years, very premier scientists and advocates and people who, you know, professionals collect impeccable data. By the way, this is like the best documented with data health event in the history of humankind. And there is good data showing huge amounts of injury and death. And Pfizer knew about it. They've issued report in February of 2021. So everybody knows. And then FDA goes and says, oh, they're safe and effective. Don't worry, everybody, go away, get vaccinated. So this makes no sense whatsoever, except when they're acting, they're play acting. And that is how they were hired to do this job. By the way, who claims the regulatory authority over them is BARDA in public presentations. BARDA has claimed that they've approved all the doses of vaccines, all the doses of therapeutics, and that they are regulating the manufacturers and that they are doing something about good manufacturing practices, although there are none, I'm sure. And BARDA is like a funding agency from the government. They're not the regulator of pharmaceuticals in the United States. I would like to see the act of Congress that made them so.
Yeah. So BARDA is, just so people know, the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So that's
exactly.
So they do handle they handle medical countermeasures against bioterrorism, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear threats. So that's that organization.
But they're not regulating pharmaceuticals in the interstate commerce, do they? No. So why are we being lied that FDA is regulating these things?
Right. Yeah, and in what looked like very much charade meetings, they were all going to vote for it anyway, and it didn't even matter. And there was even a time when they even said, well, it doesn't even matter what the FDA does. Like, we're rolling these out anyway. It was just whether or not they could be mandated once the FDA approved them with absolutely no data, oftentimes, or even data that was counter to what you should want to. I mean, I watched these FDA meetings myself, some 8 hours long, Right. And there was one even in particular where doctor after doctor after doctor, almost all of them, actually brought up the myocarditis for young people. And they said, this is a problem. Aren't we concerned about this? And in the end, they all still voted to approve it. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. What in the world?
Exactly. Because it's a charade. It was predetermined that they were going to be approved. By the way, we still did not have a single shipment of Comirnaty in the United States. I have data for all the zip codes in the United States. There's not a single batch. All of them are EUA. So everyone was fooled that these are approved. It's a fake approval because there's no real product available, and everybody's being still injected with EUA.
Wow. Those are a couple of really big revelations, I would say, from these documents. Was there anything else?
Well, so I think there was I wanted to point out that there's the contracts also specifically. So the first in scope, they say it's a demonstration, and then there's a bunch of language in there, kind of fluff language, saying, oh, there's going to be clinical trials and FDA approvals and all that. But then there's a scope, which I think was showing on your screen shortly, and it says that specifically preclinical, clinical trials and the chemistry manufacturing controls is out of scope of this project and this funding. And the government specifically is not paying for that. So
So what does that mean?
that means that all this clinical trial, again, it's a confirmation that it's a sham because it was never ordered by the government. And the government was very explicit saying that we're not even paying for it. Yeah, this one.
Yes. So why was so then a company, if you're already going to get billions of dollars from the government, you already know that this is going to end up being FDA approved, that there's because it doesn't matter about FDA. So you're not even thinking about FDA, actually. You already know you're going to get the money from the government. You already know this is going to be rolled out. You already know all of that. So yeah, why would you spend money as a company on clinical trial data that would potentially showcase that your product doesn't work? And probably in
Absolutely.
this, well, in this case, it would show absolutely that the product doesn't work,
It
right?
would have shown
Because
it doesn't
they
work.
didn't.
And you have full liability coverage. You have like
Right, and you,
sovereign
right.
immunity. Why would you
Yes.
ever do such a thing? So of course, all of this describes that they are they it was the sham was ordered. So there's Brooke Jackson's case, and it was very important. Again, I don't want to discourage people to go after Pfizer for fraud, go after all of them for fraud, because this is very valuable. Because then in the court of law, Pfizer stated this, invoked this as their defense. Their defense is we did not defraud the government, judge. We performed the fraud that government ordered. We
Right.
need to make them say it in court, all
Right.
of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they probably eventually will. I think it'll probably get to that because what we now know is that these products, even if they were hopeful that they worked in the beginning, we now know that they don't work that way. And the narrative has had to change. They've had to change their tune of what they're saying from, oh yeah, you won't get the disease, to, well, okay, you won't get severe disease, or you won't die. And then they're like, well, okay, and you need to have,
You die, but you
five
go to
shots. And
heaven.
yeah, it just keeps going and going and going. So at some point, the public is just going to stop taking them. And we've even now seen that the uptake even of the bivalent vaccine has been very low. It's like 14, 15, 16%. Like hardly anybody's taken this thing. So as they go down that path and they see that their product is just not popular because people think, why take it? They're going to have to start answering, especially then for the injuries. And then you're right. I bet you they will get into court and they will say, it wasn't us. I mean, we were just doing what the government told us to do. So I do think eventually they will get on record for that because otherwise their companies are toast. I mean, otherwise people just lose faith in those companies entirely. So the only defense they have is, well, we were just doing what the government told us to do.
Exactly. And so but the prosecutor, so Pfizer definitely needs to be prosecuted for fraud, but also the government, the frameworks that they put in place, the frameworks that they're utilizing, the Congress that has been asleep and passed all these things in the middle of the night in a 1,000-page acts that nobody ever read. That's how we end up with this nonsense.
Yeah.
So they need to act. The Congress needs to be educated about this.
And you're right, they just get these big, huge packets and they don't even read, they pass the bills, they go to the floor, they cast their votes and they didn't even have time to read these things. It is a sham, complete sham. So I mean, thank you so much for your journalism and research on this. These are the types of things. There's so many documents that were released, with even the Pfizer document drops and these other, Freedom of Information Act requests that have been made. A lot of documents, and it's just, we do need more people like yourself who have the expertise, who've been in the industry, who can comb through these documents and then just explain what's in them for us, because most of us don't have the time, or even if we look at those documents, we don't know what the heck we're looking at. We don't understand them. So, I mean, it's really appreciative that you're doing this work for those of us so we can see what the truth is. So thank you, Sasha.
No, it's my pleasure, and I have a lot of people who are working together. It's not just me being so smart. I rely on hundreds of experts and colleagues to help me.
Yeah, well, I'm really, many of us are appreciative of all of you that are doing that great work. So, Sasha, she's got a great Substack, not only all of this wonderful information, but beautiful art as well. That's why her Substack is called Due Diligence and Art. You can see, look at that beautiful artwork there. Sasha Latipova, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing this with us.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you very much.
Well, that's all we've got for you tonight. Thank you so much for watching the Kim Iverson Show. It is Friday the 13th, actually, and I hear tattoo parlors, some of them are giving like a discount on Friday the 13th. So maybe go get yourself a tattoo tonight. I don't know. I'm not going to be doing that, but hey, just kind of a fun bit of information for Friday the 13th. So anyway, have a great weekend, guys. We will be back here Monday, same time, same place. Really looking forward to the weekend and relaxing. I'm sure you are as well. So we will be back Monday. Thank you so much for watching. Head over to my locals community, join there. After shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I do a live call-in show in my locals community. You don't want to miss it. So head over there, sign up, and that's it. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.